Welcome back, audience. Welcome back. You love the beautiful ambience of today's topic, Hollow Knight. Okay, there's something I will have to admit later down the line. But for now, welcome back, everybody. I'm way less prepared than last week, because last week, I'm addicted to Slay the Spire now. Slay the Spire is my life, and it has completely enveloped its talons into me. I remember last year when I covered it. Last year on After Class with Dominic, if you want to watch that as well. I remember me being, oh yeah, it's a card game, whatever. And then next time I mentioned it, which was last week, I slowly started getting more into it. Took my own advice, and look at me now. I'm at level 16 of the Spire of the what's called Ascension mode, where you can add extra challenges, like you start with a curse in your deck, you don't have, the bosses give you less gold when you kill them, etc., etc., etc. I'm not going to bore you with the details. Just know that I'm slowly divulging myself into what I call gamer mode. Every gamer has it. It's only when the worst possible time, like when midterms are coming up. I literally have a midterm in like a week. The 9th is my first midterm, and I don't know if I'll be ready for it, because this game, again, has its downs into me. It's seeped into my brain. It's taken over me like a parasite, which is actually cyclical back to this game we're going to talk about right now. But I'm not going to talk about it yet. For now, how was my week? How was my week this week? Well, it was a nice mixture of misery, boredom, lack of energy overall. Here's the thing. I'm sure you all have experienced it. Let's say, for example, it's 10 p.m., right? Let's say you just took a shower. You're out of the shower right now and you're trying to dry off. You're in some nice cozy pajamas. And you're about to make yourself a pot of tea. Oh, a pot of tea. How lovely. Can't wait to have this delicious pot of tea. So you're waiting for the tea to boil. You're waiting for the water to boil in your kettle. And you're like, okay, well, I'm going to wait for that to boil. I'm going to go back to my room. I'm going to quickly do some work. Hopefully get some things done. And then I'll get back to it. I'm going to make some tea. So you get lost in your work. You struggle with one of the problems. There's this very tough Boolean algebra question for some reason that you're studying. And it's taking you a very long time. So long, in fact, that you've forgotten the tea is boiled. And now you're a bit dehydrated. Your consciousness has slowly left you as you're trying to... the entire question has surrounded your entire psyche, and you are wondering where the time went. It's now 10:30, and you go up, you start boiling the water again. You sit back down, you do another problem. Uh-oh, it's 11 now, and the tea has still not been made. You haven't even poured it into the damn teapot yet. What are we doing here? What's going on? It's like I'm having onset... short-term memory loss, because I haven't drunk in water? Speaking about water, I should probably get some. But for right now, that's how my week went. That's pretty much most of my week. It's been a haze. It's been just a haze. I met some friends. One of them who was on the show. You can guess who. And overall, I've just been feeling not... Listen, miserable maybe is a bit of an extension, right? Obviously, I'm not miserable. If I was miserable, I wouldn't be doing the show. And I wouldn't be talking to all of you, my dearest audience. But I have been feeling a bit under the weather. It's been a bit dreary lately. A lot of clouds in the sky, I do say. And I'm the Beatles, man. I'm the Beatles. Who is that? Lennon? Who? Someone just came out of me. Someone possessed me from the afterlife, and I don't know who. Some ghost just went into my body and just...
Oh, hey, it's me, John Lennon. I'm gonna make a yellow submarine. It's gonna suck.
And then, was it? I don't know. I need to be more versed in Beatles lore in order to actually make a full cohesive joke there. But welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. I hope your nice September month has come to a close, and we're now in October. We're getting ready for Halloween. Let's see if it lines up again. I remember last year it lined up perfectly with Halloween. And unfortunately, it's one day before Halloween. Touché, touché fate, touché Gregorian calendar. Or is it a different type of calendar? I'm too into the weeds to actually look it up right now. Let's just say Gregorian calendar. Suck it, Gregorian calendar. Here live on the show, I have a big bit with the Gregorian calendar. Oh, what fun. Oh, what fun. Let's do a quick news segment. You know what? Hey, new segment. New segment unlocked. Yeah. All right. I'm just doing this off the cuff right now because I just watched I read a quick article about how Nintendo and Pokemon Company are teaming up to file a lawsuit against Pal World. Whoa, who could have seen this coming? Listen, look, here's the thing. If you so sniff in the general direction of any of Nintendo's properties, let alone take their IP and rip it and, like, rename it and repackage it, good luck. Good luck in court, man. I don't know what to tell you. It's a tricky, slippery slope. You literally, there's like a Firefox you called like something similar to Vulpix, and it's literally Vulpix. I don't know what their goal was there. You could have just literally made like new monsters that aren't similar to Pokemon, and you wouldn't have to deal with this. I guess there are some cases where I'm like, okay, look, Pokemon, you didn't invent the genre. You didn't invent specific characters. You didn't invent the mouse. Right? If I put electricity and mouse together, you got Pikachu, obviously, right? But you didn't invent that type of design, right? You can't patent it, you can't copyright it. I guess you can. But like if that's how bootlegs are able to still exist, right? It's like if you change the design slightly, you don't call it Pikachu, you call it like Pokichu or something. Pokemon. you call Pokemon, right? And you I don't know, turn the tail upside down and give it like goat's horns, maybe. It's a different creature. It's a completely different thing. I don't know what Pikachu? What are you talking about? It doesn't look anything like it, right? But besides the point, I feel like in reality, there's a lot of these things. There's a lot of these issues that come up with copyright, not only in games, but like overall in mainly music. First thing that comes to mind is Olivia Rodrigo, but that's besides the point. We're not getting into that. But case in point, just be creative. Do things that extend the genre and don't just like, what if Pokemon had guns? That'd be so cool. But I will also say it is a very clear point that Pokemon is becoming corrupt in the way that a complete ripoff that just added crafting elements and guns into the game was able to completely dwarf any hype that Pokemon has gotten in the past in 10 years, or at least since X and Y, or at least since Black and White, whichever one came first. It's a complete overstatement. How starved, how feverishly hungry the people who like Pokemon are for an actually good Pokemon game that doesn't revisit the exact same tropes. God. When are we going to get a good one? That's my question. Let's find out. For now, Pokemon is the best one, in my opinion. Hold on, let me just try to adjust this mic real quick. How's this, audience? Is that good? I hope I'm not tickling. I'm hoping I'm not like a little dwarf living in your earbuds right now. I hope I'm not like, what was that one song, Lemon Demons? It's a train song where he dives into your beautiful, beautiful arteries. I'm not in your arteries right now. Don't worry about it. I'm not in your arteries. I'm not going to clog you like you. I'm not. Don't get the wrong idea, viewer, listener. I'm not going to jump into your arteries and stop your blood flow, all right? I'm not going to do that. No, couldn't be me. Could not be me. Must be confusing me with someone else. With that out of the way, with all my fun little bits and banter out of the way, let's jump into Hollow Knight. Hollow Knight is a game that I didn't cover last year, the main reason being that I was pissed at it, but we're gonna get back to that later. I've been reformed, I've been changed, my heart is pure now, and now I can talk about Hollow Knight. That's all you need to know for now. Let's quickly go over the overview of Hollow Knight. How did Hollow Knight come to be? How was it created? And what is it? What is it, you ask? Well, I'm glad you asked. Hollow Knight, according to Wikipedia and every single person who has a brain, is an adventure game. But the people who are more inclined with video games would know it to be a Souls-like. A Souls-like, a 2D side-scrolling Souls-like. That follows the same kind of mechanics of difficulty as a Souls-like would. However, it also has the elements of a platformer and a Metroidvania. Now, what are all these concepts you're trying to say to me, Dominic? I have no clue what the hell you're talking about. Well, if you're going to become a video game, what do you call it, archaeologist, connoisseur, even a developer, you have to know the specific archetypes that things fall into, right? Otherwise, you're going to put random mechanics in your game without willy-nilly, without knowing exactly what game you're trying to make, right? You have to have a specific outline to describe it. Otherwise, people will get bored, or they'll get confused, etc., right? Let's quickly define these terms. Souls-like is a game that takes other concepts from Souls-born games. Now, what the hell does that mean? There's a game called Dark Souls, and there's another game called Bloodborne. Put those two together, it's a Souls-born game. It takes the elements from Souls-born into a specific game. So, for example, Wukong, for example. Sekiro. That's another one. And one more, just for good measure, let me think. Let me rack my brain real quick. Liza P. Sure, why not? That's a recent one. That's very recent. Most of these games, however, are made by From Software. However, Hollow Knight is a 2D, a 2D Souls-like game, which means it takes the elements from Souls, Dark Souls, and Bloodborne. Fantastic. Second concept out of the way, what the hell is a Metroidvania? A Metroidvania is the combination of, you guessed it, two different games. It's Metroid, the one from the 80s, and also Castlevania, which is the vampire game, which also got adapted into a Netflix show and a bunch of other tie-ins. Those two jammed together. Main elements include map exploration, discovery, exploration, etc. Main concept in Hollow Knight as well. It's also more callbacks to other games. You got Link 2. And also, you think there's a Mega Man in there as well, in the movement. Specifically in how the character moves and how he controls. We'll get to that in a second as well. It was released. Hollow Knight was released in 2017. However, its development cycle, how long it took, was about 3 years. So, it was developed in 2014. The concept was formulated by two people, Ari Gibson and William Pellen, who did two game jams with the Ludum Dare specific Ludum Dare game jams, which are very popular and inspire a lot of game developers. I think some other games, indie games that have cropped up over the past 5-10 years have also come from Ludum Dare. This one is no different. There was two concepts that they combined together. The first concept was a old game called Hungry Knight, where you're basically just a little guy who needs to eat cherries. I think that's also where they got the name Team Cherry from, because that's their kind of development name. So Team Cherry made Hollow Knight specifically, but they also made Hungry Knight specifically for Newgrounds. Now, that was the first game jam. It didn't do too well. Everyone hated it. It was like a 1 out of 5 when it just came out. Second game jam, they did not finish. It was called, it wasn't even called anything. It just inspired the concept for Hollow Knight, because the theme of this game jam was beneath the surface. Beneath the surface was the concept of this game jam, and they took the character of Hungry Knight, and they took the concept of Into the Surface, and they combined them together and made Hollow Knight. Well done. We're back in the present. We've got it. We've done it. Yeah. All right. So, that's the basic history, the basic rundown of Hollow Knight. Now, after a bit of funding from Kickstarter, they were off in creating the game. They were actually able to get enough funding just under the wire from the Kickstarter campaign. Were able to switch game engines from gross, disgusting Unity. All right, I kid. It was all right back in 2014. Fair enough. And they were able to focus more on the world, the characters, and the progression of the open world mechanics of the game. Because another concept of Metroidvanias and Souls-likes alike include open world exploration. Being able to explore the world as it comes out, as you can see fit, as you, the player, want to. Here's where it gets tricky. Is this game even niche? Why am I covering it? Why am I covering it? That's the main question. Sub-question. Is it niche? That's the question. And the more I research about these games, the more I realize how small the bubble I encompass myself in is. The analytics on Steam charts say that this game is even more niche than Slay the Spire. Slay the Spire, at its peak, got 40k concurrent players. Hollow Knight, on the other hand, only has 20k, or even less on most occasions. How is this possible? Didn't I say last episode that games with more dense mechanics are always going to feel like the player is putting more effort in than they need to? So they're going to gravitate towards these more easier games, quote-unquote. I guess easier to understand games. Because Hollow Knight is a very easy game to understand. However, you're a bit misinformed. Hollow Knight is an easy game to understand. It has simple mechanics, simple rules to how it's played. But it's very difficult to master. Slay the Spire, on the other hand, has a lot of mechanics that make it a very hard barrier to entry the game, right? But once you have those mechanics down, it's very easy to get caught in the cycle. Like I mentioned before, I'm addicted to this game because of the main concept we call replayability. Replayability is the concept of all games that allow themselves to be played over and over again. This mainly applies to another genre of game called a roguelike. I'm not going to get into specifics of that, but the main principle of a roguelike is that you can play it over and over again, and in each playthrough, you're going to get a completely different layout, a different randomized map orientation, different cards, for example, different enemies, different encounters, etc. Each game is randomly procedurally generated to give you a different experience each time. However, Hollow Knight, on the other hand, is a linear, set-in-stone experience that doesn't change between playthroughs. So when a player puts down the game and finishes it, or just gives up, they don't feel like coming back to it, because it's never going to change. It's a static game. It's a static experience. It's finished. It's done. Or I just don't want to play it anymore. And the memory lasts until years down the line, until someone like me picks it up to re-experience it again. That's the only reason. It takes the form of more of a cinematic. It takes place, it's more of a cinematic experience rather than a so-called game experience. You play the game to experience the moments, the characters, all that kind of stuff. With a game like Slay the Spire, you mainly play it for the mechanics. You play it like a game of chess. You want to complete, get a specific goal done, understand the rules of the game more. With Hollow Knight, on the other hand, you have to experience the world, the narrative, the lore, understand what you place your character has in the game, and once you figure that all out, it doesn't change anymore. There's no new surprises, there's nothing else to be explored. But not quite. This game is extremely dense, and we'll get to that in a very short moment. Now, another thing that I'm going to point out as well is that we're just looking at concurrent players that are playing at that exact specific time and nothing else. We should also look at other statistics, like, for example, YouTube. YouTube's a great source to understand how many views a specific trailer gets and see how big a fan base can get, how many comments it has, how much replies, how much engagement you're getting from a specific property, a specific genre, a specific group of people. So, we can look at the sequels to each game and just see what we can get it with. So, Hollow Knight sequel, Silksong, which we'll get to in a moment, caught about 3 million views over 2 years. That's pretty solid. Pretty solid engagement. It was also published by, the trailer is published by Xbox. It was for the Xbox Game Pass, of course. Slay the Spire, on the other hand, got only 700k. However, it's only been about, say, 5 months. So, if this was a constant trend, there'd both be about the same amount of engagement for both of them in the current present day. Wukong, on the other hand, surprisingly, got even less. Only about 100k.
Quick little editor's note. Turns out I'm wrong. There is, in fact, many other trailers on YouTube of Wukong that exceed 1 million, even 2 million, even 6 million for some of the playthroughs of Wukong that I've seen before. So, I was wrong. It is in fact very popular. That being said, this next bit I still do believe. So, back to it, past Dominic.
I will say that these kind of games don't really have that much, what's the word, say, or stay in the overall zeitgeist of gaming, right? They're known for about a few weeks, and then they get petered out because they don't really have that much mechanics you can grab onto, right? They have pretty much the same idea of level progression, of upgrading your character, of doing this and doing that, and it kind of just calls back to all the other genres, as we mentioned before. Liza P also kind of struggled with this because at the end of the day, it was a Souls-like with more extra paint and a few extra gimmicks. That's about it. You still have your heal button. You still have your upgradable abilities. You still have your stats. That's it. That's all there is to it. And because of that, you can pretty much just bet that the publishers are getting their money's worth, and then they can move on to the next project. Standard procedure, as all things go in the games industry. Either way, another reason why Hollow Knight is a niche game is because it's a very small team working on it. And I'd say it kind of more so fits the independent part of independent incidentals. There's only 4 people working on it, and that includes the marketing executive. So, a very small team, all pretty skilled in their own right, and they all kind of cross over in specific genres. I mean, specific roles that they play inside the game. Now, I'm going to quickly get some water. So, hold that topic for a second. I should have like a little intermission jingle. How about this? No, that's not, that's bad. There we go.
Water.
Hold on, I can do a better version. All right. Now, there's a thing, though, with Hollow Knight, right? From its large fan base of, at bare minimum, 3 million people, maybe a little bit more, a little bit less. We'll see. It's really up in the air how many concurrent people actually know this game in particular. Not a lot of games with such a small team come out with a big game like this. That goes with both Slay the Spire and Hollow Knight. But it's still not even close to AAA publishers, right? Again, tying back to why I'm doing this entire show to begin with. Now, that comes to two of the things I've already mentioned. Silksong, and why the fan base is getting even more rabid. Why are they like little caged animals instead of a cage, just like banging at the walls trying to get the developers to listen. Hey, listen, cook us faster, come on. What are you doing? Come on! I want to play your game! Silksong is the sequel to Hollow Knight. However, it's been in its cycle for 4 years. No. Here's the thing with Silksong. The main idea with Silksong is that after everything died out with Hollow Knight, Team Cherry was planning to make another DLC for Hollow Knight. For reference, Hollow Knight came out in 2017, and they added 4 extra free expansions to the game that added extra content, extra enemies, different bosses, an entirely different area in some cases. And they were planning to make a 5th one that included a new playable character that you would encounter, that you encounter in the original game as a boss, right? Kind of in the same vein as Pizza Tower, for example. They added a new character that you encounter as a boss to begin with, the Noise, who you can actually play as and as in a completely different playstyle. However, with the Noise, it's an easier transitional period because, let me get real close for this one, it's the exact same game. It's the exact same game, and that's fair. Look, I'm no disrespect to McPig here. He made a fantastic game with a bunch of very fun levels, very good polish, love it. So all he really had to do was make a similarly playable character that kind of played similar to the original character, Peppino, and just added a few new mechanics. That's all you have to do. However, with Hollow Knight, it's a completely different game. It's a completely different area. There's nothing new. There's nothing to build off of. Even with, say, for example, Tears of the Kingdom, right? They were developing Breath of the Wild for about 8 years, 6 to 8 years. And then it was easier to make Tears of the Kingdom because they already had a backbone. All you had to do was add extra elements into the map, add a different layer to the map, 2 new layers to the map, and then you're done. That's all you have to do. Just add some new dungeons, some new temples, and you're good to go. With Silksong, it's going to be a bit of a more arduous process because, again, there's only 4 of them working on the game. They have to make an entirely new mechanical system. There's like a ton of new mechanics that were released in the trailer, like quests, like a quest board and like different towns and cities and all that kind of stuff. They're making the game bigger than Hollow Knight ever was, which is a problem for the fan base because they, as we all know, a group of people's IQ is defined by the lowest IQ divided by the number of people. So you know there's going to be a lot of people who are, what's the word, entitled to a game, specifically with Silksong. This is not good, because the problem is that they believe that Silksong should be perfect, but they're missing out on their promise that they promised in the Kickstarter because they said it would come out with the game, but now the game is a different game, and they're taking longer to make it. And I want the game now! I want the game now! And then they throw up all over their bib, and they cry with their fork and knife in hand, banging the table, wanting Garcon for more, right? That's how I describe these people. Because in my mind, you are literally getting an entirely new game with the same 4 people who were developing it and working on it and making sure that, you know, A, the game works, B, it looks beautiful, C, that it's actually, like, able to be marketed properly. There's a lot of things that go into this, and just because you're not getting, like, enough, just because the company isn't transparent doesn't mean they're not doing work, right? Of course, there could be technical issues that could be they could be dealing with inside internally. Of course, there'd be a lot of other things that'd be going on inside of it. But at the end of the day, they did not owe you anything. They didn't owe you a second game. Just saying. I don't care if this takes, like, another 2 years. Because at the end of the day, it took 4 years to make Hollow Knight at the start. And just now they just reached the 4-year mark, right? So give them more time to cook. That's all I'm going to say about Silksong. And to be fair, I was also technically kind of half-jokingly a part of this group, which I'm sad about. Because I realized that they're putting their heart and soul in these kind of games, and the community just turns their back and spits at them, right? Doesn't make any sense. With that all being said, that's the entire background of Hollow Knight. And its community and everything else. It's the group of 4 people who thought it'd be very interesting to make a game about bugs. This is the overarching theme of the game. You play as the knight who wields a very small nail in a very small town called Hollow Nest. Except it's not small, because that's just the surface, called Dirtmouth. The inside is an interconnecting, interweaving, cohesive underground area called Hollow Nest. Each with their own different environments. That's the first thing that you notice about this game. When you enter the game, you start in this kind of tutorial area. You learn how to jump, how to hit enemies, how to use what you call your soul to regain health, and eventually use it to cast spells that also do a pretty good amount of damage. So you learn all these mechanics, you continue on, you see like the beautiful art styles are taking gorgeous, like you just drop down into the world, you can see all the attention to detail to it, because the entire art style is hand-drawn, scanned into the computer, and then touched up inside of the computer. Most of it's just done in, I think, Ari Gibson's sketchbook, which he had three of, completed by the end of this game. You drop down, you go through the tutorial, and then you enter Dirtmouth, where you meet an old man who says that a lot of people go down into the depths of Hollow Nest, the ruins of Hollow Nest, for adventure. But he just thinks it's a fool's errand because that place is completely infected. Now, I love the atmosphere of this game, because you immediately drop down into what's known as the Forgotten Crossroads. And you can immediately see what he means. It's completely dilapidated. Everything is broken down. What used to be a thriving city is now completely decayed, corroded even, if that's even a word. But of course, as you explore, as you keep going down, you find other paths, you find different ways, continuously down into Hollow Nest. There are, I think, about 18 different zones, distinct zones in Hollow Nest that you can explore and all have their own bosses, secrets, NPCs, merchants, different zones that just look breathtakingly gorgeous. That's the thing I love about this game. It just has everything that you need. Everything that you need. Aesthetically, for sure. Absolutely. Now, I'm just debating whether to take this in a more textbook direction, or if we should move on into the music of Hollow Knight. Because each zone, each area has its own theme. You have Dirtmouth, which is a just kind of humble, what's remains, what's still alive of Hollow Nest. And you have the Forgotten Crossroads, which is the start of the underbelly, which introduces you to the entire theme. And you move on to a more lively section, Greenpath, that's still infected, but has a beautiful overgrowth to it. It has plants growing everywhere. Then you go into the fungal wastes, where you see these mushrooms growing everywhere, which has completely also taken over. Everything still seems normal, however, everything's still infected. There's even more I can go into, however, we are running out of time. So, I'll leave you with the next zone, after you defeat... This is where I got in my most recent playthrough, actually. So I got to what was called the Fungal Wastes, where all these mushroom folk are just walking around, spewing their deadly toxins at you. You have to make sure you dodge out of the way as you're trying to make your way through this place. And I remember, because it is in a specific way, you can actually change different runs. I lied in a specific way. Only in a specific way, because the game stays the exact same. However, there's one extra mode that's added once you beat the game for the first time, called Soul Steel Mode. Steel Soul Mode, that's what it's called. Where, if you die once, your save is deleted, and you have to start again. Which is very cruel. It was especially cruel when I, with a pompous ego, decided, hey, the boss in here? It's so easy. I've done it 1,000 times. Turns out it wasn't that easy. The Mantis Lords are not to be messed with. That's what I've learned from that playthrough. So I shall play their theme, absolutely, during this intermission. All the music's composed by a fantastic composer called Christopher Larkin. His name is Christopher Larkin. I don't know why I said he is called, thou shall be called, Christopher Larkin. And the City of Tears. The City of Tears is also very interesting because it has a specific role that's played. It's the most non-decayed part. The most untouched part, because the water still flows forever there because of a basin that rests on top of the cavern that the City of Tears is dug out in. And the music, it can't be described. All you can do is listen to it. So first I'll play the action-packed Mantis Lords, and then I'll lull you into the City of Tears. And we're back. That was Mantis Lords and City of Tears, the former by Christopher Larkin and the latter by Christopher Larkin and sung by Amelia Jones. Now, let's talk about the areas a bit more. The Mantis Lords is a specific area mainly because now we're going to get into a little spoilers, but I don't think you mind, right? The Mantis Lords is the one place that's not been infected, and that's mainly because of their tenacity towards outsiders and intruders, right? You get also a little lore nuggets later about how there's actually four of the Mantis Lords. However, one of them has betrayed the other ones because they took in the infection, which you also later learn is, again, spoilers, an ancient god that was taking its wrath on the entire city and destroyed it. So, you know, it happens to the best of us, hey. You try your best, you just don't give enough sacrifices, and what are you going to do then, right? So they took up the power and became the traitor lord, and the Mantis Lord stayed within their specific tribe in the Fungal Wastes. Now, the City of Tears also is very... It's one of my favorite zones, mainly on the fact, on the premise that it feels so urbanized, however, so empty at the exact same time. It's that kind of liminal feeling you get when there's only like three people that you see and all the rest of them are basically just zombies. One of them being the very kind blacksmith and a few other ones as well that you get to visit and see as you explore, who have apparently not been infected by what will later be revealed as the Radiance. Let's not get too much into specifics, though. The main idea of the game, Hollow Knight. You are a knight, however, you aren't the Hollow Knight. The Hollow Knight is the thing that was sealing in the Radiance, keeping it at bay. However, the spell that the three dreamers put on it made it start leaking out. It wasn't the best binding seal. The Hollow Knight being the main vessel for the infection to take place. It wasn't enough. The Pale King, who was trying to find the perfect vessel through unethical means, to say the least, was the main perpetrator for this Radiance, because I think they offended him or her or something. I don't know. Besides the point. DMs didn't really go out that well. It didn't really work out. But the main idea is that the character you control, the knight, is supposed to take the place of the Hollow Knight. It's supposed to disperse it and make the City of Hollow Knights come back to its former glory by destroying the Radiance, or at least keeping it at bay. That's the two different endings you can get in this game. The first ending is a simple ending where you simply you become the vessel for the Hollow Knight. You replace what you later learn is your brother, sibling, whatever you want to call it, and you become the vessel for the Radiance. Again, these are very vague terms, because this game is very... It leads you by the hand, but none. There's nothing. There's literally all you get is, like, this bits and pieces of context from the specific entities that you visit here. And I just looked up the rest on Wikipedia. I will admit it. The wiki on for Hollow Knight has everything that you need. So, you know, hey. Some might call me a regurgitator, but I'm just stating facts here. Just saying. Besides the point, you meet a lot of fun characters. My favorite being Quirrell. Mainly on the premise that he's just like another wanderer like you. He just kind of takes like two, just exploring the place and learning about how it works. And he's kind of like a surrogate for your own mind, like what questions you're asking while you're playing the game, which I find is very interesting. These kind of tie-in characters that allow you to reflect what you're feeling at that exact moment is what I try to do when I'm also trying to write my own things, like either for my own fantasy worlds or my D&D Dungeons & Dragons campaigns. But Quirrell does it perfectly because it doesn't lead you on too much. It still allows you to ask the question. He's just there to fortify that, yes, this is the weird part about this world. Why is it like this? So you keep going deeper and deeper and keep exploring the world, which I find is just so fascinating. It's very fun. Very fun game. The main focus of a Souls-like game, though, let's put it this way, is the bosses. The bosses are the main appeal. Those are the things you remember the most. You're like, whoa, we did it! I finally did it. I finally beat that one boss, and that took me so long, but we finally did it. We got through. Bosses in this game are its selling point, absolutely. And another selling point, of course, is the mechanics you use to defeat those bosses. As you slowly progress through the game, you get different abilities unlocked, like double jump, wall jumping, some spells, like I mentioned earlier, like a long-range, just a straight shot at the enemy. And amongst a few other ones that you eventually learn. And also a dash, that's your main one. The dash is unlocked very early. But everything else, surprisingly, is optional. Because of that open-world mechanic, it just allows itself to not even be completed fully, but still be beaten. There's so many different things to explore and dig into. Like, for example, the bosses, but also with the mechanics, the different secrets, the different lore tidbits that you unlock and learn as you envelop yourself in this game that you don't realize on a first playthrough. Or even a second playthrough. It was my third playthrough until I realized, like, some very specific lore tidbits that are like, oh, I get it now, the Radiance, right, yeah. Big old moth creature that wants to infect all of Hollow Nest, that's crazy. The bosses, though, are the main key. The bosses are the fun part. Because they are so stylized. They're so stylized in the way that they kind of exhibit the ability that you're going to unlock by beating them, and also by just the way that they integrate themselves in the lore overall. Like, for example, you have Hornet, who is a spider thing, I think. They have a thread and needle, so I assume they're a spider. Or at least some kind of arachnid that you meet at the very start or the very second area that you visit, which is Green Nest. She stops you immediately when you meet her and challenges you to a fight to see how worthy you are. And then once you beat her, she runs away. But until then, that's like the hardest challenge you get so far. Because the False Knight is the first boss of the entire game. And to be fair, that's one of the easier bosses. It should only take you a few attempts to defeat it. If it doesn't, then I don't know if this is a game for you. I'm sorry to tell you. This is, it's a little harder than you first expect. But Hornet is the first main challenge because her timing is very unpredictable. She has predictable moves, but the way that she exhibits them in a way are very unpredictable. The way she jumps, the way she dashes at you, she kind of acts like her own player herself. And clashing with you, you have to make sure you're on your toes. You have to make sure you know exactly what you're doing at any exact time. And with Steel Soul on, with permadeath mode on, it was even harder, I'll tell you that much. But, you know, you get through it. One or 10 or 50 attempts later, you'd get through it. And she leaves you with the dash ability, which was, you know, kind of her main focal point. She was kind of exhibiting it through the entire fight by flipping over you and dashing towards you, all that fun jazz. And then after that, the world is pretty much open to you. You could go down to the Fungal Wastes. However, there's so many other places to explore. Like, you can, if you have enough gold, enough geo, I guess is what the money, the currency used in Hollow Knight. You could immediately go to a specific area that requires a lantern that you have to buy from a specific merchant. And get the Dream Nail, which allows you to unlock even harder bosses. The ghosts of bosses when they're at their exact perfect prime. They're idealized, their dream self in a way. It's very interesting how they implicate it. And it's kind of a hard thing to describe just through audio. However, I think that is pretty much all there is to Hollow Knight. Of course, I could talk more about the characters. I love Nailmaster Oro, of course. That's my homie right there. One of the best characters and also one of the best bosses, because he was added in the last update of Hollow Knight in what's called Godmaster, which was an entire expansion which allowed you to replay all the boss battles without having to make a new save file, for one, and two, added an extra challenge that made an entirely new ending possible, where you have to fight the hardest boss in all of Hollow Knight, which I am getting closer to. I will admit, I might spend a bit more time on that. However, I'm still addicted to Slay the Spire, so I can't right now. And hopefully, I'll be a bit more prepared for next episode, which we're probably going to go over, perhaps. There's a few ideas I'm tossing around. There's Disco Elysium, which is a more, like, police procedural kind of game that takes place in an alternate world. Where you have it's more narrative, way more narrative. More of a, I'd say, choose your own adventure than anything else. There's, of course, we can immediately pivot to more of the music that I've been listening to. More psychedelic Australian rock. We can go that direction. Although I'm not too sure how much you guys would be interested in listening to me ramble about King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard again. So, I might leave it up to you. Maybe if you follow me on Independent Incidentals on Instagram, perhaps we'll see. Perhaps we'll see what happens. And I'll leave you with, you know what, we'll switch it up a bit. We don't need to necessarily go off the soundtrack. Let's go with something I've been actually listening to. For example, that crow is perfect. That's like the royalty-free, perfect crow sound that you get just from, like, Audio Jungle. Audio Jungle. I'll leave you with, you know what, I haven't listened to this song in a while. I'll leave you with Quarantine 3 by Ask My Bull. A nice jazz rock fusion that I think you will enjoy if you like that sort of thing. And I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye for now. See you later. How do I end this? Bye. Good. See you. Yeah. All right. Episode done. Yes. Yes. All right. All right. Bye-bye. I'll see you all next episode.